The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Case 5 from the Gateless Gate, Xiang Yan, up a tree. The priest Xiang Yan said, "It is as though you were up in a tree hanging from a branch with your teeth. Your hands and feet can't touch any branch. Someone appears beneath the tree and asks, 'What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West?' If you do not answer, you evade your responsibility. If you do answer, you lose your life. What do you do?" Woman's comment: "Even if your eloquence flows like a river, it is all in vain. Even if you can expound cogently upon the whole body of Buddhist literature, that too is useless. If you can respond to this dilemma properly, you give life to those who have been dead and kill those who have been alive. If you can't respond, you must wait and ask Maitreya about it." Woman's verse: "Xiang Yan is just blabbing nonsense. His poisonous intentions are limitless. He stops up the monks' mouths, making his whole body a demon eye." So here we are, day 2 of our practice period, deep now into something, into life, and the snow that Alan was dreaming about last night is actually here in central Massachusetts, wind blowing, snow falling, everything is covered. The trees, the road, the sidewalks, and there is this kind of blurring of what is what. Where is that sidewalk? What is that lump? And I think as we practice Zazen, as we do these sesshin, this sesshin, things become perhaps a little less distinct. In some ways, we come to Zen, many of us come to Zen to find our footing, to find some something we can depend on, to find a way to rely on something in our life. And yet, as we practice, one of the things that we might notice is that we become less certain. Or we may find that our certainty, and even our certainty about Zen and about what we're doing, that our certainty too is just another story. The certainty begins to wear down, or the certainty with who we are, we've seen it so many times, it just repeats this endless story of life. And we can perhaps begin to see through some of the cracks in the story, can begin to see that there is something else. This something else is right here, right here in this moment. What will you do? What can you do? Not on Monday or Tuesday or some other time, not what will you do next week. But right in this moment, how do we, in some ways, how do we abandon our opinion? My teacher used to say the cost of entry into the moment is your opinion. Your opinion of how it should be, of how you should be, of how the situation should be. And this work of Sesshin is the work of disorganizing in some way, or dissolving, as if we were in this fine rain and we're not quite sure where we're going. This path of Zen, we do say again and again, as Melissa said so beautifully on Friday night, intention is important. The direction is important. The momentum of the way things are, the momentum of the delusion of separation is so strong. The karmic forces of your life and my life and the life of human beings, these screens of delusion, screens, scenarios of separation that Hungjer speaks about sometimes. So strong, and this belief that the voice in our head, that the thoughts in our head are true, hard to even see that we are in the construction business. We are so attached to our opinion, it does not register as opinion. But here on Sesshin, and we might say that Sesshin is hanging by our teeth, and there is no place to stay. The ground that you are sitting on, the universe that is you, that you are a part of, the moment that you encounter, is always new. Always just this. And it seems paradoxical, but it is a rare thing to encounter this moment. And so we come together to encourage each other to sit down in the boat, we might say, and row together. We are on the ship of this Sesshin out in the open sea. And you may have thought you knew where you were going, but I hope by this time you are not quite as certain. Because the certainty that we hold on to may have been true yesterday, maybe some lovely insight yesterday, and you can think, now I know the last word of Zen. But what we are practicing is moving in and moving in and moving in, and in this penetrating into this moment, in allowing this moment to penetrate us, there is no beginning and no end. There is no fixed position because there is no reference point. There is no outside of this where we can see how fast it's going, or see what is up and what is down. And so we practice being disoriented, allowing ourselves, allowing the certainty to slowly dissolve, or allowing the certainty to break up in pieces. and this certainty that we hold on to as if it were our life. This opinion that feels so important and feels like this is what my life is. If I lose this, what will I have? Well, if you lose your certainty, what you will have is everything. It's quite paradoxical, this dying, this failure of your best stratagem. At one point in the passage we read, Hungjur said, abandon stratagems. He said, with boundless wisdom, journey beyond this, forgetting accomplishments. Forgetting accomplishments, quite important. You may think you have accomplished something, or you have attained some insight, or you have woken up. So wonderful, wonderful story, but no need to carry it forward. Abandon, forgetting accomplishments. Straightforwardly abandon stratagems and take on responsibility. So this abandoning stratagems, quite a thing for us Zen practitioners. We have this tradition, these traditional practices, quite simple in some ways, that have been handed down through the generations. And we are encouraged to trust the practice, trust this posture, trust the simplicity of the air breathing, coming in and coming out, you might say the air that breathes you. Michael's wonderful encouragement before breakfast to appreciate this wondrous functioning. If you had to tell yourself how to walk, you would be in trouble. Walking would not happen. But yet walking does happen, and you say, I am walking, but try to locate the one who is walking. There is nothing but the walking. And in this walking is our freedom, is our great demonstration, is, as Lin Shi said, your wondrous functioning is no different than the wondrous functioning of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So how do we get here? How do we find our way here? And Melissa yesterday told the wonderful story of Shan Yen, this very bright student, a wonderful memory who studied the scriptures, had devoted his life to this way, to this practice. And as he was studying with Guishan, Guishan asked him, he said, what is your own being before your parents were born? Guishan recognized his sincerity and recognized his great heart and challenged him to demonstrate, to go beyond his opinion. Even go beyond his wonderful and eloquent Buddhist opinion. So lovely to talk about philosophy, lovely to talk about Zen, and maybe you can impress your friends. Probably not, but maybe. But this is not what we are doing here. We are not talking about Zen. We are not learning to be eloquent. We are looking into this matter. What is the truth of the essence of you? So Guishan gave his student, Shan Yen, the priest who later gives us this koan. He says, what is your own being before your parents were born? And as Melissa said, Shan Yen went back and looked in all of his notes, and he had taken some wonderful notes and seen some very inspiring teachers Maybe he had a selection of quotations that were quite moving and inspiring. And he looked and he looked and he could not find the answer. And this looking in the mind, looking in the words of other people, such an important part of our practice. And it said that the next morning, Shan Yin came back to Kuei Shan. And Shan Yin said, "I have failed to find a response to your question. Please teach me the essential point. I have failed to find a response to your question. Please teach me the essential point." For me, great appreciation here for Shan Yin, who really did his best, really tried, really looked. He had his strategy, which was to consult his notes, to look into the teaching. And only in his looking does he get to this point of failure. I have failed to find a response. This kind of searching that all of us have done. In some ways, I think we come to Zen when our search has not been productive elsewhere. We have looked and looked and nothing has been satisfying. And so Shan Yin gets to this very ripe place where he says, "I have failed. I hope you have failed. I hope you fail again and again. Because only in the failure of your stratagems, only in the failure of what you usually do, your normal, the failure of your story of the world, only when this begins to crack apart, and it is, can be quite painful, when what we thought we knew, we begin to see this is not so. Not an easy thing, requires great intention, great looking into the matter. And so he says at this point, "Please teach me the essential point." So lovely, ripe and wonderful. And Gui Shan then says, "I really have nothing to teach you. I really have nothing to teach you. And if I tried to express something later, you would revile me. Beside, whatever understanding I have is my own and will never be yours." So he comes to the teacher in all sincerity and says, "Please teach me the essential point." And the teacher says, "I really have nothing to teach you. Beside, whatever understanding I have is my own and will never be yours." These kinds of things make me wonder about Zen teachers. Why doesn't he just tell him? And on some level, when we ask a sincere question, we want a sincere response. I think in this case, his teacher, Gui Shan, is meeting him exactly, is giving him the most loving response. Shan Yin is still looking outside himself, still looking for something else, for someone else. This matter that we are looking into cannot be taught. You cannot express it. Whatever we say about it is pointing to something. And what is it pointing to? But it is pointing to the heart of your heart, to the essential aliveness that is you. And teachers, such a wonderful and important part of this practice, and the teachers that we meet with in person, and the teachers that we read about and hear about, we should be so grateful. I certainly am grateful to all of my teachers, which actually include all of you on this screen. All of us are teaching, all of us proclaiming the Dharma, but your teacher cannot do it for you. Guishan says, whatever understanding I have is my own and will never be yours. For quite a while, I wanted to be like my teacher. I admired him so much and still do in so many ways, and thought I should be like him. But of course, you cannot be like anyone else. This is the good news and the bad news. Maybe listening to Melissa yesterday, you think, oh, if only I could be like Melissa and tell such beautiful stories, or be like Alan, or be like whomever. You can never be like someone else. And so we are practicing being who we already are, of not relying on, David said this, or so-and-so said that, or I listened to a Dharma talk on YouTube. This is very thin gruel and will not sustain you. The only thing that will sustain you is life itself, the aliveness of your own heart, this vivid world that is you, that is everything you encounter, constitutes the meaning of your life, Matsu said. Everything you encounter, every moment, self meeting self, little self meeting big self, in the form of the snow on the branches outside the window, the wind blowing the snow here and there. This world, sometimes so clear, sometimes the spring flowers, now here wonderfully in the middle of winter, here everything is covered. All of the plants in the darkness hiding, waiting with no impatience. This is the darkness of this time, days getting longer, but still so early in the evening, darkness comes, and we can dream of summer. Maybe some of us have even gotten the seeds and are beginning to do our gardening schedule for when they go in the little peat pots, but not yet, not now, not here. Here is winter and snow. Here is Sunday morning on our sesshin. Here is aching knees. Here is a full heart, empty heart, half a heart, no heart. And what is the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? What could the meaning be? What could it ever be aside from this moment itself, this thing itself? When we get intimate with it, there is no separation. And this no separation comes from the failure of our strategies, comes from the realization that whatever you think about this is not it. And so Guishan encourages him by giving him nothing, but giving him this great faith. Guishan, such great faith in Xiang Yan. And so Xiang Yan decides that he is going to give up looking in his sutra and his notes, and he burns them. And according to one story, he asks the permission of his teacher. He asks Guishan if he can go back to the most basic, if he can be what's called a rice gruel monk, the one, not the fancy head monk who runs things, but the one who just shows up. She does what she's told. She helps where she's asked. And if he can just look directly into this question, what is it? What is it in this moment? What is the meaning of this? And so he gives up his notes. He gives up his opinion. He gives up even knowing how to approach this, but devotes himself wholeheartedly to looking into life itself. And I hope, I so hope that it is life we are looking into, not Zen Buddhism, but life itself that is beyond sectarian, beyond this or that, these stories that we tell that point the direction, nothing but stories, wonderful and lovely, but the true matter of the beating heart, the true meaning of cutting an apple, the wisdom, the wondrous functioning, where is it? Where else could it be? How could it ever have gone anywhere? And so Shanyang devotes himself, and we know the rest of the story. The rest of the story is that in giving up, the world comes to him. In giving up, as you give up, as you die to yourself, die to your opinion, die to your notions of practice, then we come back again and again. We breathe in and we breathe out. We enter into this knowing, where clarity, unclarity come and go. The seasons, the weather, the snow, all of it comes and goes. And sometimes we go out and shovel, and sometimes we sit inside. Doesn't matter. Sometimes in impossible situation, sometimes no situation appears, and your actions are without hindrance, as Matsu said. No hindrance, even when there is nothing to do and nowhere to go. We practice sitting upright. We practice touching and being touched, joining together, all of us together, doing just this. The priest Shan Yen said, "It is as though you were up a tree, hanging from a branch with your teeth. Your hands and feet can't touch any branch. Someone appears beneath the tree and asks, 'What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West?' If you do not answer, you evade your responsibility. If you do answer, you lose your life. What will you do?" Thank you. So please sit comfortably. We'll have our Dharma dialogue. We'll look into this matter, and Melissa and Michael and I will respond to what is alive for you this morning, this moment. Yeah, Paul.
Thanks for your talk, David. Many little points came up for me. And one of your initial statements was, George reminding us to give up our opinions, that this is the cost. Mm. And right now, I'm not a fan of Paul. I'm really not liking him very much. And Part of me just wants to run away. But somehow that feels like just grasping on to that opinion. Even though the Han hasn't called me, it's time to come to the Zendo, and I come to the Zendo. And, you know, this is me noticing what my teeth are sunk into. You know, I mean, I really am. And that's, I don't like it. I don't want it. And this is where I am. And so I'm willing to be with it.
I think you're pointing to when David said that about, you know, not holding on to our opinions. A lot of us, our opinions are about ourselves, which is kind of ironic, you know, being Zen practitioners. But it is, it's, you know, as you say, your teeth are really sunk in that branch. And I think you're also pointing to the only way through is to really feel the grip of your teeth on the branch. And it's so painful. Right? This not being a fan of yourself. And I bet there's a lot of people right here in this moment who are going, me too. So thank you.
I hope not.
Well, that would be nice, but I'm sorry. It's very common.
And I think that's so important, because we can turn this into a strategy. Abandon my opinion. So I know I feel this, but I'm going to pretend I don't feel it. Or I feel this way about myself, but I know I shouldn't feel this way about myself. But I love that kind of really biting into the branch. So and the wonderful Joan Tollefson reading, awareness is its own action. Right. So then you get to be the bodhisattva who really does not like himself. And this is this particularness. Again, our practice is not philosophical. And the philosophy of whatever George said to me whenever actually is not very helpful and can be very misleading. So
hold on to that.
So I'm glad you're ignoring that and just going with what you've got.
And also it there's a clarity in just feeling this self-loathing that we think the opposite should be true. I should be the president of the Melissa fan club. You should be the president of the Paul fan club. That's not it either.
Right.
It's this, it's something else. Just like the demonstration for this koan is something else. It's not falling to the ground and dying. It's not just holding it in your teeth. It's something beyond duality.
Great. Paul, when you started speaking, my first thought was, you know, which Paul are you talking about? Because when Paul is hanging by his teeth from the branch, there's a Paul that's hanging by his teeth, but there are other Pauls. But we can all, when you're hanging by your teeth, you can only see the Paul gripping the branch.
So true.
Great. Thanks. Craig.
There's so much richness in this session already. And one of the lines that keeps coming back to me is no speck of dust outside myself. And so, you know, I've been taking Dogen's advice and studying myself. And yesterday when I did my Samu, I dusted and I inhaled dust. I mean, literally, the dust was not outside myself. And I realized that dust was probably myself. The skin that flakes off.
Yeah.
And so I've been looking for the edge where clearly I exist. I mean, I can feel my snow shoveling muscles, right? Real. They're real. Yeah. But trying to find where I stop and the rest of the universe begins, I can't find that edge. It's like the snow that is blurring the edges. It's clearly I exist, but where, I don't see the boundary.
Well, we think the world is made of things and all of them have boundaries. And I love this really looking into your own experience when you're dusting, when you're shoveling, when you're sitting, feeling your muscles. Is there any boundary? I think this is, there is a kind of freedom. Hungjer talks about, he said, many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. So this scenario of isolation is, I am here and the world is there. But as you say, when we look closer, nothing is foreign, nothing is not you, everything you encounter. Yeah. Great. Thanks, Greg. Susan.
I feel at the moment isolated in my flat. I'm alone in my flat, and we had quite bad weather in the last few days, so I was not a lot outside. And therefore, I had not so much human-to-human contact in person. Mm-hmm. And I don't like this. And there are other situations, moments in the last 24 hours or so. I don't like what I have. I don't like what I have. And it was very important for me earlier today to go out, just to have fresh air, just to see people, just having here there a little conversation. So, and there was something like, oh yeah, this is what I need. Mm-hmm. So there was something like this. And so I'm sitting here in this session with a lot of when I was listening to your talk, there was a moment when you said, what we are doing here is looking into life itself. I'm just right now as well saying these words. So it's sometimes I have a sense that I know what it means, or I'm able, or it's possible, whatever. So, and in this, at the moment, so it's like, oh, yeah. So these tears, these not knowing how to express myself just right now, looking into this, how I'm doing this, I'm not sure. But there is something for me in this sentence, looking into life itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think you're pointing to what the Buddha taught very directly. Looking into life itself means looking into the source of suffering, which is things are happening that we don't like. That's what the Buddha taught. That's the whole thing right there. But it doesn't mean you have to like everything, because that would be fake. So instead, to really live with the desire to fix our lives, you know, to run out and do things that make us feel better. Not bad to do that, certainly, but in Zen practice, we have these wonderful directions to stay with it. So to stay with disliking as long as you can bear it, and then see the pattern of not being able to bear it anymore, which is also normal, right? Then you get to be with that, and on and on and on and on and on. And this is a weird thing about Zen, the boundaries, the barriers. Stay. Don't give up. Stay with this as this. Stay with that as that.
Yeah, great.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Barry.
I have a question. I believe I heard you say during your talk that teachers can't hand over or transfer or transform. My question is, though, can't teachers elicit what's already there?
No. We cannot do that. I'm totally sure. Certainly our intention is to turn you toward yourself and to what is there, but we cannot do that. We can offer ourselves and we can point and we can poke and prod and say, look here, but it arises of itself. It cannot be manipulated. So if I try to think, oh, what's the right thing I can say to Barry? then I'm in trouble. But if we come together and I show up authentically and you show up authentically, I'm pointing and you're pointing and something happens. But the happening, certainly our intention is to provide the ground to direct as we can. But the thing itself, the wisdom arises of its own. You can't do it, I can't do it. But it certainly happens when we turn in this direction.
And before you say anything, Barry, the other answer to your question is yes. Absolutely. That's right. I remember hearing, and you probably already know this, the word education comes from the Latin root to draw forth, so to elicit, but it's a reference to midwifery. You know, the baby's being born, there's a natural process happening, and we try not to interfere with it. If something goes wrong, we have skills to help the baby get out. This means that what teachers need to know is we need to trust that what Dogen was saying, and Craig brought this up, you know, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. The second part, to study the self, is to forget the self. We have to know that that is true and keep scanning for it in a person that we're talking with and focus more on that part than on the confused parts. I was just talking to a student the other day. I was really struggling with something, like get in line. And I had this thought. I expressed this to the other teachers. Where is the stuff that I'm saying coming from? Like, I could feel somehow like a very talented midwife's hands. I knew how to focus on this one thing and not on the other thing. I don't know how I did that. I don't know how I'm saying these words right now. And so it is, I think David was just pointing to it. Whenever there's a yes or no question, both answers are true. You know, is it like this? Yes. Is it like this? No. It's of course both. And there's the same thing with two human beings. There's this mutuality of connection that David was just pointing to, which is a holy thing. And so Doksan is a holy thing. Doksan is not about coming into a room with someone who knows more than you do and proving to that person how wonderful you are and how much you know, basically creating your little shield and coming in and showing that instead of your true heart. That's not what it's about. It's not about proving something or showing off or protecting yourself. But to learn how to do that, to learn how to be fully exposed and transparent, is the work of a lifetime.
In our reading today, Barry, there's a line that says, straightforwardly abandon stratagems. If you have a strategy for how a relationship between a student will go, you've already cut off all possibilities of what happens. You know, just entering into a relationship, entering into Dokusan, as Melissa said, completely transparent, open, and authentic. And then we see what happens.
Yeah, great, thanks, Barry. Madhu.
Your talk had an emotional response on me. I think it triggered a sense of, it triggered a feeling of a sense of inadequacy, sort of. Because the talk was inspiring, by the way. And you know, the aspiration showed and determination that was showed by Zhangyan, it's really touched my heart. And then, you know, and then you feel that energy, and then all of a sudden you compare it with yourself. And here I am, like I'm just clocking time and I'm just want to get it over with. And then, you know, and that there's this inspiration. And oh my God, like, you know, how am I going to be able to do this? Like, I'm not like them. Yeah, so.
Well, and I would say that you are absolutely like them. The emotional response that you had before the the fan club issues are, referring back to what Paul was talking about. Before that happened, something touched you. And that something that touched you is the same thing that Xiangyan was experiencing 1200 years ago. It's kind of amazing, right? Human beings and our delusions, they're not that, there's not much variety in them. So you even expressing this, raising your Zoom hand right now, is the spirit of Xiangyan. And of course, you're marking time and wondering how things are going to go. So many people are probably doing the same thing. I do the same thing sometimes. It's just what human beings do, right? And you'd be doing all kinds of other stuff. Just like Xiangyan, he was so sincere and he thought he was doing the right thing every time. He thought he was doing the right thing every time until he thought he wasn't doing the right thing. And then he just persisted with something else that eventually led him back. And this goes back to what I w had been saying to Barry earlier. Guiyan knew this about him. When he, you know, the dialogue that David quoted, where he said, "I'm not going to tell you." That kind of dialogue occurs over and over and over again. Because, and it's built on trust that you don't know why you're here. No, but none of us know why we're here. We could be going to the music festival or the movies or, you know, whatever, right? But we've chosen to be here. And we don't know what it is. And we don't know how it's going to unfold. We don't know what awakening is. We don't know what insight is. We don't know what the next moment brings. And you're willing to risk that? Oh, deep bows to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, maybe with that, we'll say deep bows to everyone here. Wonderful. Let's come back to our Zazen posture for a few breaths, and then our practice leaders will move us on.